This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Michael McKee has hired a defense attorney and is expected to plead not guilty to two counts of aggravated murder. On paper, the case against him, it looks strong. Alleged murder weapon in his apartment, shell casing match, a false, failed alibi, an 8-year obsession with his ex-wife. These are the allegations, but trials aren't won on paper. McKee is highly educated, professional. Has resources, and his defense team will be looking for every crack in the prosecution's case. Former prosecutor Eric Faddis is with us to continue breaking this down. From a defense standpoint, when you look at this thing, if you're presented with this and you're retained to defend Michael McKee, what's the first thing you'd attack in the prosecution's case, and where do you see the most exploitable weaknesses here?
You know, at least at this juncture with the information that's publicly available, I haven't seen a ton of evidence regarding motive. I've heard reports that there may have been ongoing contact between McKee and Monique, but I just haven't seen the content of those alleged interactions. And so you got to look at motive. Did he have a reason to do this? There was a divorce nearly a decade ago. You know, most people don't hold on to that so tightly such that they're willing to kill somebody 10 years later. On top of that, you got to look at the ballistics. You got to look at the crime scene information. There was no signs of forced entry. And so does that give rise to a possible alternative suspect, someone the family may have known who had access to the house? These are all questions you at least have to explore from the outset as defense.
Is the forced entry, though, kind of a nothing burger? I mean, it keeps coming up as like a big point on this. And I don't know. It keeps landing to me like, and like people find ways to get into homes all the time without, you know, forcing or breaking the door down. It doesn't land to me as being super important. It doesn't land to me as like, well, there's an alternative suspect because there wasn't forced entry, or he knew how to pick a lock,
you know? or
they left the
system
door unlocked.
You know? Oh yeah. I mean, there are, tons of cases that I've seen in which there was no forced entry, but there was clearly criminal activity that was undertaken. And he is charged with burglary as well.
Yeah.
So that's unlawfully entering and remaining in a dwelling with the intent to commit a felony therein. The fact that he allegedly got in there without, you know, breaking a window, that doesn't somehow mean he's innocent. It doesn't somehow mean that someone else did this. But it is a little curious, and people have discussed it.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly an element of the case. Do you think this is going to be one of those cases where the defense is going to kind of they're in a corner. Obviously, it's somewhat too hard to know yet. But to me, it's starting to feel like, okay, now we're going to go down the line of let's try and create some sort of reasonable doubt. Let's look at chain of custody. Let's look for, was the search warrant valid? Is there anything in the police work we can look at and go, see, you didn't cross that T or dot that I? Alternate explanations for how the weapon ended up there. Are we going to just kind of see the cornucopia of we don't have much to work with, so we're just going to try and challenge the, you know, the basically the foundation of how this thing was put together and hope to God that that maybe creates some sort of doubt in a juror's mind?
Well, it would be defense's legal and ethical duty to scrutinize mm-hmm. all of the significant pieces of evidence in the case. And that includes any kind of forensics analysis, experts, reports, those kinds of things, any constitutional issues that may have arisen. Like you said, were the search warrants appropriate? Were they executed appropriately under the Constitution? Was the defendant adequately advised of his Miranda rights before giving this alleged false alibi? Because if there was some constitutional defect in that advisement, then the false alibi might go out the window. The jury might never hear about it. And defense can sort of cut down the evidence and then drive towards some kind of reasonable doubt. That would be a common approach.
Yikes.
How damning is it when you do say something, kind of going back to the alibi? And we don't know exactly what his alibi was. We don't have the details of that. But all we know is that it contradicts apparently reality, saying where he was and what he was doing. How does that land with a jury typically when it can be truly proven that your alibi doesn't match up? Not saying that the alibi is like, and you were there murdering them, but it was just, we can prove you weren't where you said you were. I mean, it's doubt out of the gate. Is that a big thing to jurors when they're trying to assess the authenticity of someone claiming it wasn't me?
Oh, sure. I mean, if the horse the defense is going to ride is that it wasn't him, and he gives false information about where he was during the commission of these alleged murderers, that's a glaring red flag. It's a tremendous problem. Now, I think defense might try to neutralize it in some fashion, perhaps by arguing that, hey, this guy has never been in contact with law enforcement. He's never been part of the criminal justice system. He doesn't have experience with this. He was freaked out. He learned that his former wife was killed. He reads between the lines. He sees they're looking at him. He comes up with something stupidly in the moment that he thought might protect him, even though he didn't do this. You know, there are a number of ways that his counsel might try to neutralize that fact if it goes to trial.
Sure.
How do you counter the narrative of that he was obsessed with her for all those years with your client and with the jury without putting them on the stand? Obviously, it's going to depend what's admitted at some point here, whether all of those claims from the family members of her saying that she was concerned about him and was worried and all that, whether all that gets admitted, that's a big thing. But how do you counter arguments like that? Because they're emotional, they're going to land. People can relate to situations like this and feelings of being unsafe because of another person. They can be very, very powerful. But again, how do you counter that if you don't? I mean, other than just saying, no, that's not true. He's a really nice man. You know,
sure. Yeah, that won't be enough. But there are things that defense could do. If I was on the case, I would start interviewing any romantic partners McKee may have had between the divorce and the alleged incident, and talk with those folks and say, hey, you know, was McKee, you know, routinely bringing up his former wife? And if the answer is no, if McKee appeared to be committed to this new relationship, and the former relationship was you know, really not on the radar and not discussed, that's something. Additionally, I would interview all of his coworkers, and I would say, hey, did he seem like overly fixated on his ex-wife from 7, 8, 9 years ago? And if they say, not really, he didn't really talk about her, he seemed to be invested in his work and doing what he's supposed to do, I think there are ways to cut against that narrative. That's assuming you can find those witnesses and they can testify to that truthfully.
Yeah, that's a big point. I know there has been allegedly one person who went online, posted a video. It's since been taken down. I've had a chance to see it, of a woman who claimed that she dated him for about a year. Her testimony was that he was boring, basically, that it was really hard to go deep with him, was the way she described it, where it was very surface level. He seemed nice. He seemed friendly, but... So not like monstrous, but also really difficult to, you know, go beyond surface level conversation. Doesn't really paint the portrait of a killer, though, either. But again, I mean, there's a lot of people who interacted with folks like Alec Murdaugh and all that, and they paint him as this, you know, lovely, you know, he's a successful attorney and, you know, very surface level. And so you get a bit deeper.
Ted Bundy was a nice guy, too.
Yeah.
Right. Good point. Yeah. And it's, you know, and especially some of these high level professionals, they have experience in putting on a front and in putting on a mask and in creating an impression for their clients, for their colleagues, for the public. And so some of these folks are well versed in how to hide what might be some sort of darker stuff going on the inside. I don't know if McKee is one of those dudes, but could be.
He was a successful surgeon with malpractice suits that were closing in, and that professional life was reportedly starting to collapse in 2025. Is there any room here for the defense to argue some sort of diminished capacity, a mental health crisis, or anything that reframes the cold, calculating killer narrative into there's some sort of mental crisis going on? I mean, obviously, if he did this, the silencer shows premeditation. I mean, that seems to be a pretty damning piece right there against him. But no matter what, I mean, is there any narrative where it's not necessarily, oh, he snapped and he's in this state of psychosis, but it's like this ongoing, long-term messed up way of thinking? Can you argue anything like that in terms of mental capacity? Or is it really difficult to do, especially if you're, you know, performing surgery in between?
Totally. You know, in most states, they no longer allow these arguments for diminished capacity to serve as a defense. Now, they can serve as mitigation. They can show that, he is less morally blameworthy because this was going on. You should be more lenient on him. But it's usually not, almost never an absolute defense to just say, hey, he was having some mental health issues at the time. His cognition, his emotional state were declining. And that's why this happened. Well, too bad, bro. That's not a defense. Now, if it rose to the level of something like a mental disease or defect that caused him to not understand right from wrong or not understand really what he was doing, his own actions, that's another story. But we're not there yet.
Yeah, hard to be practicing doctor too and have that going on and not have people around you stating that there's a problem.
Totally, Stacey. There's, that's what the prosecution's going to say, is that he was performing all these high level actions, including surgery. That's not somebody who is like at their wit's end and not in control of their body or mind.
Or if his patients are dying right after, that might, I don't know, that might lean into that argument a little bit of like, see, he wasn't in a good state of mind. And it might just be that he wasn't in a good state of mind. It doesn't mean he's innocent. It doesn't mean that he didn't know what he was doing or have any control over it. It just shows he just didn't care. You know, and that is the crime. You know, it doesn't matter if you don't care or not. If you did it and you knew what you were doing, it's the crime. But I don't know. There's so many. This is just, it's getting darker and darker. And for a man that was so accomplished, obviously there's a level of intelligence there. Mm-hmm. But seemingly when it comes to the social world that he lives in and everything around him, it doesn't seem to be a very bright one there. But we'll find out more as this all continues to evolve.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is sharing the message that connection is crucial because good relationships are an essential and sometimes overlooked component of mental well-being. If your relationships could use some strengthening, a licensed therapist from Talkspace can help. Therapy can help you communicate better with loved ones, repair conflicts, and understand how to address loneliness and build community. It's easy to sign up. Just go to Talkspace.com and you'll be paired with a therapist within 2 days. You'll meet with your therapist online on your schedule. Plus, Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Make personal connections a priority and start today. If you're not covered by insurance, get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.